Welcome to All About the Brahma Kumaris. My name is Magla Pillay. I'm a judicial officer in South Africa, and I'm here today to interview Sister Denise, who is the first person in the West who has been practicing Brahma Kumaris teachings, and she has been doing so for the past 40 years. The Brahma Kumaris has been in existence for 77 years in India, and there are Brahma Kumaris activities in over 120 countries across the globe. And the purpose of today's program is to answer a few questions regarding what the Brahma Kumaris does, to debunk certain myths about the Brahma Kumaris, and to ask previously unasked questions. Thank you. Welcome, Sister Denise.
Thank you.
The subject of today's program is the environment. And let me start on a controversial aspect. On the one hand, the Brahma Kumaris speaks about the transformation or the end of the world as we know it. And on the other hand, whenever you go to the headquarters of the Brahma Kumaris, Mount Abu, you see construction happening on a daily basis. This confuses the living daylights out of many people. Could you please explain what is going on?
I think that the period of time that we are going through is a period of transition where the civilization as we know it is breaking down on many levels. Environment is one of them. Politically, financially, many of the systems, the infrastructure is under severe stress and from time to time breaks down. Now, all of this construction that's going on in different places is to receive people who want to experience some relief from all of this, and potentially if we find ourselves, you know, in a disaster situation, then we have the arrangements to manage and to relieve the distress of pretty large numbers of people. I think that Brahma Kumaris is fundamentally philanthropic and wishes to empower people and also to make people aware that we are in very delicate conditions. And so for that, we need to be personally very strong. So there are more and more people who are coming, especially to the headquarters. Sometimes we get up to 30,000 people at a time coming for the experiences, the trainings, the classes, the courses, the meetings that are designed to empower the people who come so that then they take that back with them and they can apply that, what they have learned here in their place. You know that we have hospital, medical facilities, car accidents. You know, in India we have now, and just near here, big highways. But the what the highways have done is they've allowed the traffic to travel much higher speeds, but the corresponding improvement in people's driving ability has not kept up with it, and so you get very big accidents. And so we provide the in our trauma center the necessary medical care for car accidents, which happen quite dramatically as a result of the increased speeds on the highways. Of course, I would like to see, and we do have a road safety campaign also going on, so that people are learning that yes, you must wear your seat belts, and yes, you must keep in your lane, and yes, you must do all of these things, because people's driving skills really need to be brought up. There are also failures in the harvest because of the destabilized weather patterns. Recently, you know that there have been big typhoons and hurricanes and all of this, and these disturbances also earthquakes and winds and all of this, it creates a problem in the harvest. And when the harvest fails, then that creates very severe civil disturbances.
Mm.
And so we need to empower people to be able to get through when these difficulties happen. One of the things that happens also a great deal is power cuts, because the population keeps growing, but the infrastructure is under such a severe strain that it falls apart very often. So, for example, we have the solar power station, which is under construction now, which is going to be able to use the sun, which shines very powerfully here in Rajasthan, to collect that energy and transform it into electricity, because for people to get through these difficult conditions, whatever we can do to ease the difficulty, I think is a good thing. So that is really what's going on there.
Hmm. What is the Brahmakumari perspective on Earth itself and the future of the Earth?
The Earth in terms of its geography, we see the oceans are polluted, depleted, damaged, they're getting poisoned, the water table is getting lower and lower, there's contamination everywhere, the earth is under very severe strain. We think about the five elements, air, earth, fire, water, and ether. And you know, when you meditate, that is, the soul is connecting with the Supreme Being and it spreads an atmosphere. Now, whatever is going on in the human mind, it's affecting the elements of matter. And there's a Japanese person by the name of Emoto who had done some quite well-known experiments on water, showing how the molecules of water, the crystals of water, are affected by thought, are affected by words, are affected by attitude, you see. And so this was able to be shown for water, but you can understand that it's going to apply to the other elements as well. So when the human beings, who are after all the stewards of the earth, when the human beings misuse the earth, damage the earth, you know, is very often spoken of as the mother.
Mm.
The mother who provides everything, you know. We believe that there was a time when the earth was so fruitful that nobody needed to work, nobody needed to grow and cultivate things. There were fruit trees, there was cereals, everything was just there, you know. And whatever you would want to plant would just grow very easily. But now there's desertification, there's aridity, there is salinization happening to otherwise arable land, and it's getting very, very difficult. So the earth and the people are, instead of being in harmony with each other, they're in antagonistic relationship because of the way people treat the earth. In Brahma Kumaris, the idea is that the soul is eternal, the earth is also eternal, and that every so often it renews itself. So we believe that we are now at a point where the earth is so depleted, as are the souls, and both the souls and the earth need to go through a process of purification and renovation. And so also we think that this practice that we're doing only occurs at this time. We speak about the confluence age. The confluence age is a period of time where the earth is really shifting from a state of complete depletion, shifting into a new springtime. And so we feel that everything that we do in terms of spiritual practice, generating pure atmosphere, vibration, all of this is like a kind of nourishment, not only for people, but also for the earth itself, so that that will contribute to the process of the earth getting completely renewed. So this is something that we do as part of our meditation.
All that you said sounds plausible to somebody who is interested in spirituality. There may be a scientist who just listened to your answer and would think, what absolute rubbish. What would you have to say to such a person?
Well, you know, I don't really need to justify myself, you see. I think that everybody has their own perspective, and if I say, yeah, you know, to me this makes sense, and so I will act on my understanding, and it will be seen sooner or later. If there's a good effect, then great, you know. If not, then you haven't lost anything, you know.
Okay.
Because we're not really about proving who's right and who's wrong, but it's more like love, you know. You just love. Somebody may or may not want to receive your love, but you love not because they have to receive it and return it and so on. That is not our reason. You see the right thing to do, you do it. Let it go.
If somebody is leading a spiritual life, is there a certain manner that they should conduct themselves in respect of the earth? What is a respectful way to treat the environment?
Well,
should such a person be green, totally green? What's commonly now known as, should you separate your garbage into, recyclable or not? Is that what's required?
Well, every little thing helps, right? You have to see for yourself. You know, different people are motivated in different things. Some people really like to do it in a very tangible, hands-on ways. Some people like to do it in a more larger framework. I think it comes down to, I would really like to go away from this word should. And you look at yourself and you say, okay, what will you do? What do you want to do? Do you love? You see. I think that when people see food being wasted or any kind of waste, there's a feeling, you know. Or if you see, you know, large areas where it's polluted because industry just doesn't take care of things, you feel something. So there's a relationship of the heart between yourself and the earth, and that relationship is very individual. It depends who, but you know, I mean, I'm a person who is very attracted to and loves nature, and so I naturally will, when there are things that come in front of me, I will naturally do my bit to see that my contribution to the earth is positive, is beneficial. You know, I think we have karma with each other, and we also have karma with the earth. After all, the earth is providing us, it's provided us with our bodies, provides us with food, it provides us with air, all of these things. I think an attitude of gratitude is good in this respect. Ultimately, it comes down to relationship. If we have a harmonious relationship with the earth, then we will just, you know, intuitively, instinctively do things that are going to pursue that type of harmony, and then other people will see what you do and they will do likewise. I mean, the idea of separating your garbage and so on, that's become an accepted good thing to do, so nothing wrong.
Climate change has become a hot topic, yes. Pardon the pun, for the last while. But I once came across a study where it was said that most people refuse to buy into the understanding of climate change. yet on the one hand, preparations are being made for carbon emissions to be reduced so that we will have an earth to live on for the next 2,000 years. And on the other hand, there are people who don't believe it. Should we bother trying to save the earth? Will it make a difference?
Well, I think the earth will take care of itself, myself, you know. And
I don't think it's a question of the earth. I think it's a question of the human beings. How long will we last on earth? If the water level has to rise by 1 meter globally, most of earth as we know it will no longer exist. Which is the fear of the melting polar caps. So,
well, I think that's not a problem for the earth, that's a problem for the people.
Oh, yes. Which comes back to
because
my point.
Because the earth doesn't mind if it has higher levels or lower levels. That's not a problem for the earth. It's a problem for the people who live in coastal cities.
Yes.
Which
yes.
is most people.
Yes.
The big difficulty that environmentalists have to deal with is that the overpopulation, the human population, is really straining the resources of the earth. And the debate is whether or not climate change is because of human activity, you see. And so there are some people who are saying it's because of human activity, and therefore if we change our activity, then we will stop climate change. And then there's other people who say, well, it's happening anyway, with or without human activity, it's not going to make any difference. The reality of climate change is upon us. People first were alerted to it in 1960, when possibly our change of activity could have made a difference, but at the moment, doesn't matter what we do, the process of climate change is so advanced and it's increasing, accelerating, that I don't think that that you can reverse it. But what I do think you have to do is really think about your personal relationship with the earth, you see, because that's a karmic account. And I think that karmic account means if you do damage, damage will happen to you.
What is your definition of damage?
Well, we talked earlier about do no harm, do no injury. The idea of nonviolence, which we talked about on another occasion. And so, you know, whatever I do as an individual, if I'm coming from my place of purity, peace, love, my karma, my action will be like that. It's a seed. And the fruit of that seed, I will have to consume. So if I go against my essential nature, then it will come back to me. What goes around comes around. And in a sense, you can look at it from almost a selfish point of view, and say, well, you know, I want to experience benefit, so therefore I must do the right thing, which will produce that benefit. If a person is thinking in a very short-term way, they will say, well, I want my desires to be fulfilled. I will, you know, live now, pay later. Okay, live now, pay later, but then later comes along and then you pay. Whereas the other attitude is, I'm not going to operate on the basis of desires. I'm going to operate on the basis of love, which is giving. Love means giving. You're either a giver or you're a taker. So in the world we live in today, everyone is called a consumer, as a taker. A person who wants to be spiritual, they find themselves also wanting to be a giver. And you give, you receive the return of that. You take, you're going to end up with nothing. It's a spiritual law that we need to take into consideration. They say the earth has enough for everyone's needs, but not for everyone's greed. And you can see statistics where, you know, 1% of the population is using up, you know, 50-60% of the Earth's resources. So that is the inequitability or the inequity that people react against, you see. And so the idea of spirituality is simplicity. If you live a simple life, you're not going to be taking that much from the earth. So your relationship is going to be very sustainable. But if you want to live a luxury life, then you're taking a lot, and, you know, the account comes up that, well, you know, you say, okay, well, I have money, I can pay for it, but then you may have to pay for it in other ways as well. You know, so I see that some of these ideas like simplicity, purity, not being greedy, not being full of desires, not having to have the latest, greatest thing, you know, some discipline on oneself, that is going to benefit a great deal.
The average person, including the average spiritual person, doesn't actually think of Mother Earth. It's one of those things that we take for granted. It's like if you've always had water and electricity, you simply, without even thinking about it, go to your bathroom in the morning and open the tap knowing that water will come out. Is it encouraged that we make a shift from that type of attitude where you take Mother Earth for granted to what you just said? Or
you see, we live in a world, which I again mentioned, since about the Second World War, where there's this idea that everybody should be able to have an abundance of everything. And there was this belief that, well, there's plenty of water, there's plenty of oil, there's plenty of everything, we should enjoy it. So this then became the idea, the attitude, the culture. So consumer culture, the materialist culture. What spirituality is saying, that materialism and spirituality, they are opposite of each other. And spirituality is going to enable a much more sustainable relationship with resources. And materialism is just depleting everything at an exponential rate, and all of a sudden, boom, there'll be nothing. So a materialist will say, well, you only live once, so we'll just enjoy it. A spiritual person will say, well, you know, your soul is eternal, your soul is immortal, so you will be around. Now think of the next generation. You have a responsibility. So I think a lot of it has to do with the propaganda. And we have been fed the propaganda of materialism, and we have consumed that propaganda and internalized it and accepted it. And spirituality, I think, is giving a different propaganda, saying, wait a minute, think about what belief system you have taken on board, and really see, check it against your conscience and check it against the reality that you see in front of you, and maybe you need to think again about your dedication to a materialistic life.
What does the Ramakumari feel about the future of the earth? Will it be the same in 100 years, 2000 years, or what will happen?
Well, we, in the Brahma Kumaris, as I mentioned earlier, we have this idea of the confluence age. And we call it Purushottam Sangam Yuga in the Hindi language. That is the confluence of two ages, eons. And that is a period of enormous change. Change within humanity, change within the environment, change of ideas, a change of everything, big change, really an age of transformation. And it's an age of a lot of disturbance. We feel that there are very negative forces at a very extreme point, and there are very positive forces, and these forces are clashing with each other, and humanity is kind of caught in the middle of that clash. And so one of the things we say is, in such a situation, make yourself strong. Make yourself filled with spiritual power so that you can cross this period of upheaval. And then we feel that it will settle down and it will have almost like a reset, a restart. So we call that the idea of a renovation, a renewal of the world, that the world, we call it as, like, it's old. The current civilization, we would say, is on the way out. It's destroying itself. And the seeds of something new are constantly being planted. Anytime anyone does an act of spiritual benefit, they're planting a good seed. You know, so the old is going, the new is coming, and we're crossing that.
Was Shakespeare right when he said this is the winter of our discontent?
I think so. Okay. And that was 500 years ago.
Yes, it was. Before.
And I think we're a lot more discontented.
Yes.
I think we're a lot more discontented now. Mm. And that's a symptom of spiritual depletion. You know, so as you start to fill yourself with wisdom and with the qualities of the soul, then you are much less susceptible to being put out of order, and you can maintain that contentment of your spirit.
There you go, listeners. Brahma Kumaris believe that spirituality does have a positive effect on the environment. We thank Sister Denise for her time, and we will say goodbye to everyone right now. Until next time. Thank you.